You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Podcast Juice. This is Geeked Out. My name is Michael Dean. And joining me today is Ampu. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. I've been listening to Ice Cube all week, so I'm going to be on one.
Uh-oh. All right. Also joining today is Mr. Sean Hill. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Palmer's back from her summer visit. She's tanner than she was when she left. Other than that, doing well. Got a buddy's waiting to go to this afternoon, so I'm sitting here in my little studio looking photo shoot fresh.
Are you going to be DJing, sir?
No, I will not.
All right.
I would love to, though.
I didn't know you was a DJ.
Oh, I did back in the day.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right. It's working. Shout out to B Street. Sipping tea. I'm officially sipping my tea today. Podcast juice is a mixture of vanilla tea and some chronic. So if I start to acting a fool during this show, hey, now you know.
Wait, did you say chronic?
Yeah. Well, it may not necessarily be the chronic, you know, that type of, but it does.
I don't.
Let's just say it has some of that green. In tea. This is some real green tea.
Some of that. Ooh, wee!
Yeah, you know, it is legal here in Washington, so I got some of that green tea, as they say. Sip it. All right, let's get into things today. We got a lot of things to get into. There was a few movies that came out this weekend. I did not see any of them, but I probably will go see Agent 47, the new Hitman movie. I probably will go end up checking that out. But I believe, Sean Hill, you saw the movie American Ultra.
Unfortunately.
What were your thoughts? Should I go see that today?
No, you should not. Save your money and go see Straight Outta Compton again. Mm-hmm.
Which I have seen it twice.
This movie is an absolute mess. It stars Kristen Stewart and future Lex Luthor, Jason Eisenberg. They play two teenage stoners, boyfriend, girlfriend. They live together. The Eisenberg character, who I can't remember his name right now, he suffers from panic attacks every time he tries to go anywhere, leave the city. So they just live a humdrum life. He's a sales clerk at a no-name convenience store, and she works at a Bell Bonds agency. Well, lo and behold, it turns out that Mr. Eisenberg is a sleeper agent with the CIA. Wow. And for some reason, they decide they want to off him, and his handler, played by Connie Britton, comes to warn him. She gives him this kind of, I guess, secret code, and it takes him a while to figure out what happens to him. And then all of a sudden, he becomes this ultra-violent, ultra-smooth – well, not ultra-smooth, but he becomes this again, just guy who can do all these things and kill people. Now, they don't explain any of this. They don't explain why he's a sleeper. They don't explain why they want to kill him. They don't explain any of that. So the whole running time of the movie, which is an hour and a half, we're sitting here wondering why all this is going on. And, I like a little mystery, you know, as much as the next guy. I like, okay, what's going on? But they never, ever answer the question. Basically, it's Cheech and Chong meet Jason Bourne or Lucy, which inspired a spirited debate that Q-Storm and I had online the other day. But this is an absolute skipper. This will probably end up on my list of one of the worst films of the year. It was one of those movies where I sat there afterwards and began questioning what I'm doing with my life.
Damn. Now, I always have to ask because – you know, the benchmark of bad movies this year was Jupiter Ascending. Is it as bad as that?
No, it is not. Right. No. It had a few moments of, you know, it had a moment or two here or there that made me laugh. But as a whole, the biggest problem was the tone of the film, the director. He just wasn't able to mix the dark comedy with the ultra violence. And I mean, it can be done. I mean, it's been done in Pulp Fiction and True Romance and other movies like that. So it can be done. It just didn't work. The two of them together are good. They've got great chemistry because they've worked together before in Adventureland, which I would recommend staying home and seeing that versus going out to the movies and seeing this.
All right. Yeah, I think I've seen the trailer for this, and it just looked like one of those movies that, I look at, I'm cool. You know, it's a Netflix skipper.
This is one, This is one too that I had no idea what it was going to be about. Again, my whole, I don't watch trailers, so I didn't know anything about it at all. And then when the secret agent stuff started, I'm like, okay, this could be interesting, but it just never goes anywhere. And like I say, they for the first maybe half hour, they're flipping back and forth between the two of them, and then stuff going on at the CIA, and there's no correlation to what's actually how these two stories are going to mesh. And then when they do mesh, it just doesn't matter.
All right. Well, there you go. American Ultra. Skip it.
Well, skip. See, he lost me when he said Kirsten Stewart.
Kirsten Stewart. Is that the girl from the Twilight movies? Twilight. Okay. Yeah.
Let's put it this way. Yes, Kristen. She plays a great stoner. I will say that because
she's
never
probably
emotes.
Not playing.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. She never emotes. If you've seen any of the Twilight movies, her facial expression never changes the entire time. When she's supposed to be happy, she looks the same. When she's supposed to be sad, she looks the same. So.
All right. American Ultra. There we go. Again, you didn't see Hitman, did you?
No, it screened the same night.
I will. I might check it out because I found out that, I don't know their names, but the directors of John Wick apparently directed the action scenes of this movie. So that is sort of a draw to me to want to kind of see.
That seems like a waste of talent.
Well, I mean, they're good action. I think they come from the stunt action background. That's their thing. So I could, for me, that's the only thing I'm like, I may have to, the action guy in me may have to go see this. I don't expect it to be a great movie, but if it's got some badass action, I can cheer for that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. We'll see. I think I've seen the other movie, Hitman movie. I just remember it being corny.
Oh, you're talking about Hitman? I thought you were talking about American Ultra.
Oh, no. Yeah, that would be a way. That'd be odd, but yeah, no. Hitman, yeah. So maybe that. But let's get away from the movies. I would recommend you seeing Straight Outta Compton again as well. Want to go to TV. So there's a couple of, not trailers, but pilot episodes of some upcoming shows that are coming out this upcoming season, I believe, or maybe next year for one of them. And I want to talk about a couple of them. First, we are going to start with Lucifer. I just watched the show this morning. And for those who don't know what this show is about, yes, it is about the devil. A devil comes to Earth. And apparently it is based off of the Lucifer devil character from the Sandman comic books. So this is a comic book related TV show. Sean Hill. Did you have a chance to watch Lucifer?
I watched it this morning and absolutely loved it.
All right. What were some of the things you loved about the show?
The guy who plays Lucifer is so perfectly cast. He's got that smarmy charm about him. It was kind of when they introduced the police procedural thing. I'm like, oh, here we go. Here we go again. But they actually kind of made that work. And I think the scene that kind of got me saying, okay, I'm with this show, is when he goes to the school and he visits the cop's daughter and he says, you look like a hooker or something like that. What's a hooker? Ask your mom. And then he goes up to the bully and does the eyes. I'm like, okay, I'm with it. this is a cool show. I really liked it. It will probably get some controversy. I wish Q Storm was here, so I'd definitely love to hear his take. But it should do well with the comic tropes out there. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I really did. I watched it with the wife. She actually loved it too, which kind of surprised me. So this will be definitely one whenever it premieres. This will be on my DVR for sure.
Yeah, I watched it as well, and let me just say, I love this show. I didn't know what to expect. Listen, I'm black, as most of the people on this show are, but you know, you say Lucifer is a TV show? Oh, hell nah. That ain't it. You better watch yourself watching that. But let me tell you something. You get off of the fact that, yes, this is the devil, and this is a show where he is sort of the hero, likable character. Listen, for me, I'm not saying it's the best show of all time, but this show was brilliant. It was hilarious. The guy who plays Lucifer, as you said, I've never seen this guy before, so I don't think so. He nails this. He is the ultimate asshole, suave, creep master. He's the devil. And it's like what you would it's not what you would expect and what you would expect the devil to do. Let me just set it up just a little bit. It's in present day. The devil is on earth. You get the impression that he has left hell and has set up shop on earth. He has a club, nightclub. This is in Hollywood. And he is the devil on earth. And it just starts out crazy. He's speeding down the street. He's got a nice car. I love the music in this show. Cop pulls him over. And, you know, he says, why'd you pull? You know, they get all into the stuff that normal people, you don't really want to be doing, blasting music and kind of playing the cop for a fool. But he essentially bribes the cop to let him go. And it's the fact that he is Lucifer, that he's able to talk to people that the way he does and the way that they react to him. And I think that's a big point of the show, is when you watch people reacting to him. So that was kind of cool. And then he goes to the club. And here's where I latched onto this show. I said, oh, this shit is crazy. He walks in the club. He comes in there like a boss. And incidentally, the guy says, hey, boss. He walks in. He walks to the bar. And what's that song, Fame, is playing?
Yeah.
Brilliantly used. And he walks in there, and I'm like, okay, this is like probably on some Sodom and Gomorrah. This is what I would assume. Like, I'm thinking of the intro to the first Blade movie, you know, that club scene. Yeah. I'm like, they got to show some crazy stuff. Otherwise, I'm kind of not going to buy this. So he walks up to the bar, and there's this bartender, beautiful girl. And she starts talking to him, and you can tell she knows who he is, right? And from she's talking, and all of a sudden, this dude was behind the bar down. He raises his head, and she's like, okay. She's like, oh, you're okay, thank you, you're done. This dude was down there eating her out. Like, what the hell? And I don't know. I'm not well versed in my demons and their character names, but he calls her something, and I assume she's like the demon of sex or something. I think she even says, like, I'm obsessed with sex or something like that. And I was like, okay, this show is off the charts. I didn't know that this is a Fox TV show. I was like, who is showing this? But it continues on, and as Sean said, it turns into almost a buddy cop type of thing. It is so outrageous, but he is Lucifer. And then there's this other cop. I don't want to spoil any of the funny stuff that happens, but it's interesting show because he, Lucifer in this show, he admits to who he is, and he tells everyone, I'm Lucifer Morningstar, which is so outrageous. And most people just don't believe it. You know, they just like, that name is ridiculous. And he tells, I'm immortal, you know, and blah, blah, blah. He does not lie. But he is the devil, and he is a slick son of a bitch. Like, I love the way he does people, and it, you know, it plays on that whole thing of, you know, you want to do a deal with the devil, or you want to sell your soul with the devil. You know, the other premise part of this episode is this pop star girl comes up to him at the club, and she's comes right out and says, you know, did I sell my soul to you to get popular like this? And I don't want to say any more than that. And there's something happens with that, and it sets the stage what the show was. But I was all into it. There's the scene where he goes to the famous black rapper, gangster rapper.
Oh, house. I was just going to mention that.
Oh, boy. I know some people are going to have something to say. But I thought they handled it brilliantly. It was funny to me. It was crazy. Last thing I'll say, I'll let Sean speak. My favorite scene, though, is when they both go to the psychiatrist lady.
Yes.
That to me is like, when you see, I was like, see, this is how, how people react to him, and the way that lady was reacting to the devil being in her presence, she'd down there ready to have an orgasm. Like, and he's such, he was such a Mac about it. I was like, this, it was hilarious to me. I was like, this dude is a fool. And the stuff that she was saying and what was going on. And I'm watching the whole show and I'm like, okay, he's got to go back to that. They got to go back to that. That would be so hilarious. And sure enough, almost as if it was a Marvel after credit thing, they go back to that. And I was in tears. I was laughing. I was just like, this motherfucker. I'm not supposed to like him, but I was like, I like this dude. I can't imagine what they're going to go with this show. It just outrageous to me, but I loved it. Yeah, Sean, this show, man, I could see this being very popular, but it's going to be very controversial for some people. But
well, you know, there are not a lot of anti-heroes anymore on TV. I guess the Breaking Bad, I guess he was maybe an anti-hero, yeah. Maybe. And so I think one of the things you mentioned too, and it's a semi-spoiler. I love the line he says. And when I say your music, I don't mean black people. I mean your music. Yes.
That was hilarious. I was wondering where he was going with that. I'm like, this. I said, no, they're not going to have this motherfucker say I hate black people. But the way I was like, okay, I feel him on that. Was hilarious, man. Like, yeah, that whole, all of the scenes with him were hysterical to me. Like, it was just, and I don't know if they can keep this up, but it was just great to see the devil. You know, I'm not. It's great to see a character like that put in these positions, and how, what is he going to do? What are people going to say? I don't know if that's going to be fun over and over every episode, but I loved it.
Well, you know, we won't get into too much details, but you know, you do have the subplot also, right, with his brother. So, I mean, I could see, you know, them kind of going, having two stories each week. You know, you've got that story, and then you've got, you know, maybe, because I believe they solved this murder, so you know, it'll be something else to come along. And then the family dynamic with the cop lady and her daughter and ex-husband. So yeah, this is a great show. I really, really enjoyed it. Whenever it comes, I'm there.
Yeah, the whole, there's an angel character that sort of reminded me of, there's been a couple of movies that sort of kind of have that sort of, there was that one movie with cast down angel. Then he had to fight like the whole army of angels. And it was a couple of years ago. Some dumb movie. I was kind of like, they're skating the line. I don't want it to focus on that whole, you know, war with God kind of stuff. I want him to still remain a very snarky. You know, that's what drew me in. I'm glad it wasn't this whole, you know, almost underworldish. And I guess an underworld guy that directed those movies did this first episode or something. But
oh, really? Okay.
But yeah, they can kind of leave that whole, you know, part of the show on the side. I just love, let him be on Earth and act a fool.
Yeah, because like, you know, all that stuff is kind of like supernatural. I mean, they have gotten way into the whole mythology with, you know, them working with the devil and da 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 and angels and Castiel, and I mean all of that. That when the show used to be just about them, you know, kind of X-Files-ish, but and I think that show has deteriorated so much because of that. I still watch it every week, but that stuff is not that interesting to me. It's the super, quote unquote, supernatural stuff that I like. So hopefully with this show, like you say, they'll keep his character the same. And they'll keep the mythology stuff to a minimum.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to say this doesn't come on until 2016. That's what, at least.
I think it's a mid-season. It's probably a mid-season replacement.
Okay. Yeah, but if you can go find this online, definitely check it out. I did see that they showed this episode at Comic-Con last month, a month before last. There has been some. A group, I think, tried to petition to take it off, you know, not have it shown. Forget all that, man. This needs to be shown. This is great TV. So there you go, Lucifer. Definitely go look out for that. Also, there's another.
I just want to give a public service announcement, some housekeeping. This will be my last episode with you guys, you fucking heathens.
Hey, see ya!
Watch the show, yeah. And then,
as I say, it's gonna make some people uncomfortable, because, but it's supposed to. I mean, he is the devil.
But, you know, but really, they don't really play up that aspect of him, you know.
What do you mean they don't play it up? I don't think.
I don't know. I hate to use this example, but Palmer came in to the room we were watching it. She came about halfway through, and she didn't know what the show was about, of course. And then later on, she said, "Oh, is he supposed to be like a devil or something?" So that's what I mean. They didn't play it up. It wasn't like every scene he's, you know, spitting fire and doing the whole, you know, nails and all that stuff.
Well, it's not that type of show, which that's why I like it, because it's...
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I think...
If you threw the devil in the real life situation, he's not going to be with a pitchfork. He's going to be one of the most cold-blooded, you know, scandalous, snarky. He could be just like that guy. He's not a good guy.
Yeah, no, I agree with it. It's just one of those things where, you know, he's this and he just happens to be the son of the devil. You know what I mean? That's what I mean where they don't play it up. That's not the primary focus of who he is. He's a smarky guy. He's a bad guy. He says the things that we probably would all, you know, want to say, and does the things that we would all want to do. But like I said, they don't play that up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I actually disagree with that, but I think the whole thing is based on him being... But I have no problem with it. Again, he is a character. You can say he's real or not. He's still being the character. It doesn't mean he has to be the hero. He is exactly who he doesn't lie about what he does or says in this show. And that's why I was like, there's a part where they kind of was like, is he trying to be good a little bit? You know, he's even questioned by a couple of people. And I like that conflict. I even, you know, I'm not going to give too deep away, but even, you know, the God side wants him to be the devil. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I created you to be. You can't be you can't be tiptoeing and shit. And I was like, okay, they tell you right off the bat, he is not just some self-created situation. He is that character. He may sort of be sort of conflicted a little bit about who he is as a person. Kind of reminds me of a little bit of Preacher, which will be a TV show here soon. But that book, you know, guy that has a very defined role of who he's supposed to be. And he's kind of not sure all the way right now in his life if that's what he is. But he is that dude. And you see the flashes of that, his whole point. He wants to punish people. And I was like, this motherfucker's sick. Don't get it twisted. Like, he got people doing some crazy stuff, but it's because they're reacting to who he is. But which is interesting, you know, again, the other lead character, the girl, that's interesting that she doesn't react to him. And he found that, and his whole point of being around her is like, how come you're not, you know, falling for what I'm saying? She's like, you repulse me. I'm good. And I thought that was interesting. I hope they don't make it corny and like she's some sort
there's
of
gonna be, yeah, angel. There's gonna be some more to come out with that.
Oh, I'm sure. All right. So yeah, Lucifer, watch it for yourself. I guarantee you'd be like you'd be like, God damn, this shit is kinda good. All right, the other show we got here is based off of a movie. It's called Minority Report. And this was the Tom Cruise, Steven Spielberg movie from, God, was that 10 years ago? How long ago was it?
Oh, yeah.
That was about 2002, I believe.
Yeah, so wow, that was a while ago, a decade ago. Now that's a TV series. I am not sure what network this is, and if you guys...
Fox.
Oh, Fox again. And this one stars Megan Good, actually.
Looking good, all right.
Oh, yes, sir. Well,
it's not just a slogan, it's a reality.
Did you see this episode?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
What did you think?
It's funny that you mentioned it because this guy, Confused Matthew, he rates this movie as one of the worst movies ever, as there's a bunch of logic gaps as well as plot holes. But I loved Minority Report. And I was actually looking forward to this show, but the issue that I have with it, the casting is just not right for me.
Ooh, bingo.
Yeah. Megan Good, she's great to look at, and I'm happy to see a sister get her opportunity, but she's no Nicole Beharie. Let's just keep that 1,000.
Who's
keep it
Nicole
all the way
Beharie?
With what is her name on Sleepy Hollow?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's no Nicole Beharie. Let's just keep that 1,000. But I mean, she does a more than admirable job. She convinces me that she is a police officer and that she does know all the stuff that she's doing on the show. It's just that I want somebody more skilled. What do you call him? The psychic.
Precog.
The precog. There you go. That guy's horrible. Please recast him. He is on the same level as young Bruce Wayne to me, as far as make me want to turn the channel with his performance. I will give him some props. The stuff that he does where he's predicting people, he's like, yeah, you might want to duck. You might not want to do that this day. That reminded me a lot from the film, and I thought that was a good touch, but he's just not good either. I think the casting director could have spent an extra day to find, yes, to find him. I honestly believe that if Megan Good had a better co-lead to work off of, it would definitely elevate the show, but he is horrible. I already hate the fact, I guess you need to have that cliffhanger to tie us into coming back, but the whole thing as far as what happened to his twin, where his twin is at, I'm just like, I kind of liked it better when it was just each day they were going to try to each episode they were going to try to prevent a murder, and that was what their thing was going to be. Tying it into the minor was it called Precog?
Yeah.
What did they call it? The whole division that the police division they work with.
I don't remember.
You know, tying it into the fact that all of the people that they arrested before they committed their crime, some of them were injured. Some of them had their brains were just totally messed up, and some of them want revenge. I think, okay, that's kind of brilliant, and I love that. It's just that then the mystery of where his twin's at. Yeah, you can miss me with that. I'm gonna keep watching it. Hopefully, the guy gets better. But right now, he's kind of a turnoff for me.
Mm. All right, Sean Hill.
Pretty much echo everything Ampu said. I absolutely hated the lead character. I'll give it two more. The Walking Dead rule. I'll give it two more. If it doesn't get any better, the things that I liked about it were the things the little end jokes. Like there was the part where she picks up the CD. Now I'm thinking that she doesn't know what that is. That was not. She's wondering what's on it. I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but that was my impression, was that CDs don't exist anymore. And she's looking at this strange object like, what is this? I like the Simpsons joke. That was pretty funny. But those were the things that I liked. I didn't like anything else about the show. And the birds, come on. Killer birds. Really? That's what we're going to do with a show like this. We're going to have killer birds. All of a sudden, Alfred Hitchcock is turning over in his grave. I agree with him about Megan Good. She's good to look at, but I'm just not buying her in that role. This pilot, which I'm kind of looking at right now, I don't see if any words are recasting. So, and it premieres next month. So if they haven't reshot it, they're not gonna. So that makes me not want to watch it anymore because of the lead actor and because of the stupid way they ended this, at least this first story.
All right. Like I say, to me, this show seems like more of your normal sort of TV programming type of a show. You know, I can see there is a I don't know if it's a genre or there's a style now where you have to have, you know, the black woman and then the white dude or whatever. I think there's a couple of shows that sort of follow that model today. And this, to me, follows in that sort of realm. You know, this is a science fiction version of all, you know, I think you mentioned Sleepy Hollow, then there's Scandal. And, I don't know if there's any other sort of black woman, white dude show. So I was kind of like, eh, I already see how they're going to do the dynamic here. But I will say this, I was impressed by the production quality for this to be a sci-fi thing. I'm always like looking to see how corny it'll make it look. I thought that the stuff that they were showing and a lot of the technology, that was pretty cool. I was like, wow, like they spent some money on this. I love the world that this takes place in. I think it does have nice ties and callbacks sort of to the world of the movie. I was trying to figure out this takes place after those events, it seems. Megan Good's character, I didn't have a problem with it. I think you spoke on it. On one hand, I appreciate that they could cast someone like her. To me, she's exceptionally beautiful in this, the way it is shot with her for whatever reasons.
So misogynistic.
Hey, I'm just calling it what it is. And, you know, they have her with the, does she have a tank top or tight shirt or something? I mean, they know exactly how to put the assets out there and how to film and light things. And I was like, wow. You know, and I'm going to jump into creep mode here for a second. You know, her lips and all this kind of stuff. I can't help but, like, look at it. I'm like, she's a very good person to look at. Kind of like Halle Berry. You just kind of get sidetracked by, this isn't really, this is just okay, but wow. Some people just scream in my attention, in my way, what'd I say? Screen presence or very unique looks and things. So they have that going for it in terms for me to watch it. I didn't like the other guy either. He seemed corny. The character was corny. I didn't have a problem with the actor, but just the way he was written, I was, this is going to get tired real quick. He's sort of the fish out of water, you know, but he can kind of foresee the future type of thing. I was, okay. So I don't know if I could watch this on and on. This would be the show that I would probably watch maybe one episode, maybe two, and then I'm done. It's not dark enough. It's not written smart enough. It just screams of monster of the week, case after case. And I'm tired of that type of programming 20 years ago. So for me, I don't. There's nothing for me to want to watch. I've seen this before. It's just that they have some different faces. So I just thought it was okay. It's not terrible, but I probably won't watch it.
There's another a person of interest. That was what I wrote in my notes with the whole black woman, white guy deal.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
That was another one. And it kind of bit Fringe a little bit too with the whole eccentric father thing, and I was like, this is like a combination of a whole bunch of other shows, and you did mention the effects, which were really good, which leads me to believe that whatever budget they had, they spent 95% of it on the special effects and 5% of it on the cast.
It's a very well done show. I mean, in terms of the look of it. They doing a thing. So I could see this show lasting for a season, possibly depending on how fans react to it. They may bring it back. You know, I could see it being one of those shows where if it's got a lot of, you know, swell from users, they'll keep it going. But I just don't see this. I see this as a season on Netflix. After a while, just one of those, let me watch this. And you watch it. Like, yeah, it's not that bad. It's cool. You know, you keep it pushing. Any last words on Minority Report?
The thing is, Megan Good, either her agent or people that casting just really haven't figured her out. Because to me, the best performance that she's given has been in The Game, when she played the football owner's wife. I think she was the wife. And she was like pretty much she was a cheating wife and kind of bitchy, which I hate to say that about Megan Good. But it's just like they really haven't figured out her best casting. That's a shame.
All right. Let's move on. I got another movie thing I wanted to bring into this. Man of Steel 2. I'm seeing some headlines here where there's some talk of Mr. George, is it George R. Miller, I believe, who directed, of course, Mad Max, just came out. There's talk of him directing the Man of Steel 2 sequel. That's a curious thing to me, considering how I'm assuming Batman versus Superman is, and of course considering the first movie, Man of Steel. I can't actually see it. I'm not mad at it, but I just think it would be a whole different direction. But I'm curious, Sean Hill, do you have any thoughts on it?
Oh, hey, I'm all in for that. If they can get him, if he's actually the guy, because I mean, I think we all pretty much loved Fury Road and the Road Warrior is a classic. So if he can bring any of that to Superman, I'm down. Anything can be better than the first Man of Steel, for sure.
Let me say this. The first Man of Steel, I watched it recently. I still have the same problems with that movie that I said, but I actually do like the movie. I think I said I liked it before, but it doesn't show a complete Superman, but I do like that movie. And I think you said something last week in regards to Fantastic Four. I bet you I really like Man of Steel when the next Superman movie comes out. It's almost like an incomplete telling of him as a hero. But Aunt Pooh.
I'm with it. I mean, let's just be honest. Who has done the last couple of DC films? We've had Bryan Singer with his homage to the Donner films. We've had Zack Snyder. We've had Christopher Nolan. Now, the one thing that I will say, looking back at, I just watched Mad Max this week. That film is overrated, by the way. It's good in part. The chase scenes are good, but it's overrated. And looking at Fury World, which I have watched, I want to say, 4 times within the last 2 weeks. If they're going to go into this gritty, realistic, somewhat dark tone for the DCU, then I think George Miller would be the perfect person, because even though he does give you this like this desolate land that there's is just carnage and chaos, he actually does is able to direct hope. He's to give you to feel like you're going to, at the end of the movie, that you can feel happy going away when you got through paying for your movie. So in that sense, I'm like, okay, yeah, George Miller, all on board. Hopefully he helped out on the script. So hopefully, since they'll have some respect for George Miller, the work that he did with the Mad Max franchise, that they'll let him write the script as well. So that way he can put his vision accurately onto the film, and hopefully even more, that he actually has some type of reverence for Superman. So I'm all on board. I think that he can make a good film, and at the same time, even though you're in this totally desolate world that's crappy, he can give you something positive and hopeish about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do agree that I would love to see his vision a Superman. I think it would be way different than what we've seen so far, and I'm not mad at that. It just I feel like it's going to be very different, which could be a great thing, because when I remember seeing those first trailers of Fury Road, I was like, this motherfucker's out of his mind. Like the imagery is just out there. It's just like bold, and the colors, and it just looks savagery of, I remember like, god damn, this is going to be a crazy movie. So if he can't bring that to Superman, yeah, that would be nuts.
So what you're saying is he can make a good Superman versus Darkseid film?
I don't know. I'm not saying that per se. I don't know that much about Darkseid to say that. But I'm just thinking it would be something I would not imagine the Superman film to be. That's just my thoughts. But I would love to see it. I would love to see it. It'd be very interesting.
Well, let's just hope he doesn't make Lois Lane the main character and Aunt Pooh, just a side note, Mad Max isn't the film that everybody loves. It's the Road Warrior that everybody loves.
Right.
I agree with you. Mad Max is it's okay, but the Road Warrior is off the chain.
Yeah, that was the one. All right,
making my way to it.
But you haven't seen the Road Warrior? You should.
I've seen bits and pieces. Maybe when I was young, gotcha. Like between 6 to 9 years old, I've seen the whole movie. But it just, you know, this is go back again with a more mature filmmaking mind to really appreciate it. So I'm going to watch it sometime today.
All right. Let's get into this. We have a few more minutes here. Straight Outta Compton. So, of course, this movie has been a success, still going. It is a success. This is what, the second week I think we're going into. A lot of talk about the movie, as it should be. A lot of talk about stuff off the screen, you know, the whole Dee Barnes thing. And now we see that Dr. Dre has come out and issued a statement, sort of an apology about his actions in terms of women. Apple's put out a statement as well. And we've talked about, you know, I think on the Prince podcast last month, we were kind of questioning, how are they going to handle these situations? So I wanted to get you guys' opinion on the apology thing. Also wanted to get you guys' opinion of, or thoughts on, that. I have to say, keep it 100. That nigga Daz, that's his name, that nigga Daz. He has apparently come out, I think he's on record speaking to TMZ, saying that there is somewhat of a sequel and plan for Straight Outta Compton, where it focuses on Snoop Dogg and Tupac Shakur. So I wanted to see what you guys thought about that as well. So I'm going to go to Ann Poo first. What is your thoughts on Mr. Andre Young, Dr. Dre, talking about the beatings?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we all knew it would happen. And clearly, this is why Apple is worth, well, maybe not Apple. When you have billions of dollars, you employ a great public relations and crisis management team. And they did exactly completely right out of the playbook. If you're going to issue a statement that can be really be incendiary, you do it on Friday afternoon. Why? Because most of the news organizations are ready to just get out of there. They're really not looking for any news. And then you have the weekend where people can digest it. And by Monday, people then forgot about it when people start planning their news shows for the week. We call it the Friday news dump. And that was just well played, Apple. I tip my hat to you. You had Dr. Dre put out an apology to the women that he hurt, not really going into any detail whatsoever who those women were and what he did, and just trying to put this all behind him. For me, I understand why they need to do it. It's a billion-dollar organization. You have tons of women that buy their product, and having this fool up on their board isn't that good of a look. And more than likely, and I got into it with somebody. I said, the only reason this was put out there is because Apple couldn't get rid of him. Because if they could, there wouldn't have been no apology. They would have quietly said, Dr. Dre is leaving Apple for some other projects that he's more passionate about. We wish him all the best in his future endeavors. Now, regarding Daz, first of all, he's saying that he's producing it, which, God, I hope that's not the case. Please tell me that's not the case. And second of all, I like this fact that they're going to follow up on the film. I hope it's not so much all Tupac and all Snoop and more so about Death Row. I'm going to keep pushing it. I'm going to keep saying it until it becomes a reality. Stranded on Death Row. That's what I want to see.
All right. Sean Hill.
I'm saying this twice in one show. I pretty much echo everything that Ampu said. The apology to me is a non-issue. I mean, we know why it was done. You know, being cynical or not, we know why the apology was issued. It really doesn't change anything. I'm sure Dre is sorry. I'm sure, you know, he's made amends. I'm sure he's, you know, not involved in that type of behavior anymore. We all know that. Apple even knows that, but it was just something that had to be done. It's done. Let's move on. As far as this so-called sequel, if it's made and if it's produced by that nigga Daz, which I can't believe I'm saying that, it will undoubtedly join the ranks of Grease 2, Caddyshack 2, and Graffiti Bridge as one of the worst sequels ever made in the history of sequels. I hate to even call it a sequel because it's not really a sequel. They're just riding the coattails of Straight Outta Compton. I mean, we've got Master P announcing, you know, he's going to direct a No Limit movie. You know, what's next?
Master P directing, come on, man.
Well, he's directed before, so that's already...
That doesn't mean it was a good idea.
Well, no, I agree with you 100%. This will go, I think Mike said, straight to Netflix. I'm saying it'll go straight to Torrent. and then, I mean, with the way everyone is now, what's next? You know, Me So Horny, the story of Luke Skywalker.
I would watch that.
Yeah.
I do.
Don't get that one
that.
Twisted, Chuck.
All right.
I'll be there for that.
That was a swing and a miss, sir.
to each his own. All right. Maybe that wasn't a good example. Maybe there's another Ricky Deek label out there.
So Horny, the movie. That would be a cold movie, too.
But, yes. No, I, it's just riding the coattails. Again, it'll be Graffiti Bridge, and people will forget about it in 2 or 3 years after it comes out.
Yeah, it's what I always ask that when this conversation started. I said, did you see Belly 2? That's why. Did you see Belly 2? Did you know there was a Belly 2?
Hell, did you see Graffiti Bridge?
Well, yes. But, I mean, in terms of, you know, the big hip-hop movie and the sequel, Belly 2 starred The Game, right? Straight to video. And when you watch that movie, it got shit to do with the original movie other than the title says Belly 2. So that's what I would say to Daz. And listen, I love Daz, Corrupt, DPG for Life, all that. But unless the producers of Straight Outta Compton are the ones saying that they're going to be getting behind this, I'm good. I'll watch it. I will say this. If they did a sort of lower budget, you know, straight to Netflix or, you know, one of these video on demand services, I would check it out, you know, but I would not expect it to be on the level of a, you know, studio produced movie, $1 million budgets, 2 years in the making and, extensive casting search. I wouldn't expect that from this. And like I said, unless I hear some big studio talking about they're going to do a follow up, I pay it no mind. Like, yeah, okay, yeah. Any one of them cats can go get a HD camera or turn on their iPhone and shoot the sequel if that's what they want to do and shoot it in HD. Have at it. But it ain't going to be, it's not going to be on the level of this movie.
I can hear Cube now. Hey, yo, Daz, don't stick to producing.
No, do stick to producing. Record producing. This modeling, you stay there. I would rather them just do the Tupac movie, which I'm sure they're going to do, and let it be, the big budget thing. But I would rather see a documentary produced by Daz, and take the footage, actual real life footage, and have them do a documentary. Yeah, I'd be all on board for that. But a narrative movie, you ain't ever done one before.
Okay, am I the only one that expects that by episode 12 of Empire, we'll get a strangely similar Suge Knight character on the show?
Some argue you can see that now with the other one. They got the lead guy.
Talk about Lucius?
Some of his characteristics. Strong arming.
We need a hood-ass Negro.
I don't doubt that they may try.
And Terrence Howard does not convey that whatsoever.
I don't disagree, but I hear you.
Well, and in terms of, I guess I should have mentioned a hip-hop sequel. Sorry, Aunt Pooh, Breaking 2.
Oof, horrible.
And whatever. I love that movie.
Oh, and that says it all.
All right.
It's horrible.
In terms of Dre thing, it's a business. I don't know if it's going to be over in terms of, there's going to be certain people that are just going to keep talking about it, which they have a right to. If I was Michelle A or whoever, if someone's trying to tell me I couldn't say something, I talk louder. Like, y'all can't tell me to shut up for nothing.
Did you see her appearance on The Breakfast Club?
I saw like earlier this year or last year.
Man, I really don't want to be all that negative, but she sound like, she's like a 2 on a 10 brain scale. She just sound like out there and like the voice doesn't help, but it definitely enhances that. She's not the sharpest tool. She really isn't. At first she says, Suge never laid hands on her, and then she's telling the story. I like, yeah, then he backhanded me. They're like, so wait a minute, he did put at you. Oh, yeah, that one time. I'm looking like, what the fuck? I don't know
she
if I take
about that check.
Hey, they all sound crazy to me, but that's just my opinion.
Well, not D. Barnes, but
Michelle. Well, yeah, no, I'm just talking about Dre and Suge.
Yeah.
She has a new interview that she has on Vlad TV.
Oh, DJ Vlad, yeah.
And
yeah,
she talks about how the first time she sort of started really talking to Suge and what was going on with Dre. That whole thing sounded like an episode of Empire. I was like, it sounds crazy. Again, some people are mad because she's talking, which I don't understand that. I mean, we're talking about this because Dre's talking. They made a movie about it, stuff that happened 20 years ago. So it's out there. You open the door, then you're going to open the door. You got to open the door to the conversation either way. But like I said.
Wait, how did she explain hooking up with Suge after Dre?
It was on some real, I think you had a word for this. basically Suge again. He's the emperor.
Oh, you said Dirty Mackin?
A lot of Dirty Mackin. Quickly, she's with Dre. She leaves Dre. Dre's cheating with other girls. Dre begs her to come back and move in with him. She comes back in. She tells Dre, if you don't come home one night, I'm out the door. And of course, Dre is, I guess, talking to the lady he's with now during this period. She finds out. She leaves. She doesn't have any money. She says it's 1 o'clock in the morning. She needs diapers for Dre's son. Dre is nowhere to be found, so she calls Suge. Suge comes through, Captain, you know, laces her up, you know, stepping in, stepping up, taking care of the son. Dre is like, I'm about to get married to, listen, me and you are not going to work per se. Why don't you just be my mistress while I'm with the girl I'm with now? And she's like, huh, nigga, crazy. And she even says in the interview, Dre would be with all these other girls every time I was trying to call him. She said, I think now when I would call Suge, Suge was probably the one giving those girls to Dre just so he could get to me. So again, so Suge is actually very brilliant.
Michelato?
Well, I mean, he's playing chess to these niggas. Let's be clear. So he's trying to get the money. And if he was already married to somebody else.
So you say he was doing all that to keep drama, to keep the money?
Yeah,
I can understand Dame Dash, you know, trying to hook Jay-Z up with hoes because he's trying to smash Beyonce. But I'm like,
yeah, no, that's low level.
Doing all that for Michelle.
Yeah, that's low level. That's what I said. He's evil, but he's a brilliant. He doing that because he's on some master plan. As we see in the movie, he's on some master plan. I'm playing chess. You niggas is playing checkers. You don't go from being a bodyguard to that way because you want some, you know, dumb stuff. Right? I'm trying to smash hoes. He obviously didn't love these hoes. Men hoes as well. So he knew what to give people to get what he wanted. So, again, there's a lot of Dirty Mackin. But, you know, is she airing that out? Yes. Is the movie airing things out? Yes. When you open the door, you open the door. And I always say I'm sure that Apple and Dre were fully aware of the possibilities of what could happen by putting this out. But they realized there's going to be more money to be made than there is to have to worry about the backlash. And they know how to handle it. They put the apology out and let's get this paper. So well played. Yeah. Any other things on this? I think Sean might have to jump out of here soon.
No, I'm good for a few more minutes. We're going to talk about the top assassin movies.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ann, did you have any last words on this whole thing?
In the words of Nate Dogg, hey, 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 just smoke weed every day.
There you go. All right. So, yeah, top assassin hitman movies. Go ahead, Sean.
All right, so my list, as usual, is going to be a little bit unconventional. I came up with 10, of course, because that's what I do. And I'll run through them real quick, and we can pause if we want to comment on any of them. Number 10, Assassins, Sylvester Stallone and Antonio Banderas. Not the best film ever made, but it's one of those. Again, had a long debate with Q-Storm. It's not good, but it's entertaining. And as long as it's entertaining and not like offensive or bad or whatever, I can enjoy it. Number 9, The Equalizer, one of the newer films on the block. Denzel doing his thing. Great entry into what Mike calls the wrong one genre. Number 8 should be tied with number 9, but I'm pushing it up just a little bit because it's slightly better than The Equalizer, and that is John Wick, which is another entry into the wrong one genre. Keanu Reeves kicking ass, taking names. Number 7, In the Line of Fire. Clint Eastwood, John Malkovich. It's a great one of Clint Eastwood's great last films. I mean, I know he's still alive, but so it's a great film. John Malkovich doing his thing as the assassin. Number 6, The Long Kiss Goodnight. this is another one of those films that is one that I can watch at any time. I don't care what time of night it is or what point of the movie it is. If it's on, I'm watching it. Gina Davis, Samuel, kind of still before he was in every movie ever made, but it's a great movie. Number five, John Woo's The Killer. Featuring some great action, some great one takes. This was kind of hard to find, so if you can find it, seek it out because it's great. Number four, Kill Bill, and I'm going to put them together because there is one film, The Whole Bloody Affair. It's it's 4.5 hours, where they both films are together, and they've added some additional footage to it. Uma Thurman. Gosh, I was forgetting her name. Uma Thurman as the bride, kicking ass, taking names again. Tarantino's great, brilliant writing and direction. Number three is The Professional with what's the guy's name? I can't remember his name now. Sorry. Jean Reno and Natalie Portman's first role and, again, an outstanding appearance and villainy role with Gary Oldman. Number two, No Country for Old Men with Javier Bardem playing one of the baddest hitmans with the worst haircuts to ever grace the silver screen. It's a great film. It's actually in the top 10 of my favorite films of all time. And coming in at number one, I got a hankering for some Royale with Cheese. The number one hitman film of all time. It's got to be Pulp Fiction. Got to be Vincent Vega. Got to be Jules Winfield, Ezekiel 25:17, The Path of the Righteous Man is bisected on all sides by the inequities and the tyranny of evil men. That is the best hitman film ever made. Any discussion?
Okay. Was that from memory or were you reading that?
I've seen that film 1,000 times. That was from memory.
All right. I can respect that list. Ampu, did you have any?
Well, I narrowed it down to three, but I want to give an honorable mention to Pulp Fiction. That definitely was a nice one. Mine are, and this is going to be an unconventional one, but there was a hitman in there, and it was a good film, The Bodyguard.
The Whitney Houston movie?
Yes, The Bodyguard.
I haven't seen that in a long time, so I can't remember.
Yeah, there was a hitman slash assassin plot to it besides the love story, and it was a good film. I mean, come on, let's get
whoa, 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 whoa! Well, I gotta hit the rest of your list because that's number three.
Sounded a little soft in there.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
And unfortunately, you named my other two already. I didn't think you were gonna name No Country for Old Men, but that is definitely my number two. That's if I'm gonna hire a mofo to kill somebody, I want that dude.
Anton Sugar gives no fucks.
Exactly.
Period.
And my number one is Kill Bill, the one and two combined.
All right. I don't have these in any order, but I will say, yes, John Wick, Equalizer, two recent movies, badass, wrong one type characters. Another one is my man from... Lord of the Rings. It's a comic book movie, actually.
History of Violence?
Yeah, History of Violence.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that's the wrong one. Like, I love that movie, too. That's one of those movies where you're watching it, and you're like, okay, yeah. And then what they say, it goes from 0 to 100. You know, when the shit go down, you're like, oh, this that motherfucker right here. So I love that kind of movie. I believe he was a hitman for the mob, whatever. He was a killer. He was a shooter.
Yeah. You know, as good as that movie is, then William Hurt comes in there and just he comes in and just turns it out.
Yep.
Man, William Hurt.
Yeah, actually, I think I watched that maybe a couple months ago. It's a good movie. What else? I liked the first Crank movie. What's that dude's name?
Jason Statham.
Jason Statham. That's another one of those kind of movies I liked. It was so over the top. I'm just thinking on these recent stuff. Smoking Aces. I like that movie. You know, it's a whole bunch of different killers acting a fool. Shout out to Taji P was in there. Alicia Keys, they were badass to me.
Common.
Common was in there, yep. What else, man? I agree pretty much with all the ones you guys said. That's the ones I can really think of top of my head.
Except for The Bodyguard.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that, but hey.
Are we talking the hitman aspect of the film, Aunt Poo, or the whole? Because The Bodyguard is a terrible movie.
It is not a terrible movie. I mean, Whitney was getting her chops together, but overall, I thought it was a good stop the killer film.
I could just see, you know, you with your boys. And they're like, man, we need, yo, nigga, let's put some shit, put on some hardcore shit, nigga. Let me put this in. And Aunt Poo pulls out The Bodyguard. Like, huh?
See,
no, man, this is a cold movie. I'm telling you, because they killing in this too.
Really? See, this is exactly why we can't be great.
I'm just saying, I don't know how that would go over. Like, yo, what's the top gangster movie? Listen, I'm not mad at that. I need to watch that movie again. It just doesn't come to mind. I didn't think about that. You know, I always think of Whitney and the Love Story.
And I forgot to give my honorable mentions. I have three. The Whole Nine Yards with Bruce Willis. Again, the Bruce Willis rule does apply to that, as every Bruce Willis movie. JFK and Ghost Dog.
Wait. Oliver Stone's JFK?
What other JFK do you know? Yes, Oliver Stone's JFK.
I don't know if that would count. I mean, there was an assassination in there, but it was
about a bodyguard.
It was about somebody trying to kill. It was
about JFK about
hired to kill somebody.
Was that what JFK was about?
JFK
was about uncovering the conspiracy of what had happened.
And what had happened?
What
a hitman killed the president. Damn it, it's a hitman movie. I'm putting it on my list. If you could put The Bodyguard on your list, I could damn sure put
JFK. Wow.
I see another t-shirt coming on.
To paraphrase Emperor Palpatine, the hate is strong with the.
Yeah, put that on a t-shirt. The Bodyguard is hardcore.
I didn't say it was hardcore. At least quote me right. Damn. God dang.
Speaking of gear, so ladies and gentlemen, you can now get some Podcast Juice t-shirts. There's a great mug. Coffee mug inspired by Aunt Poo's classic moment of To the South. So I'll put a link in the show notes and stuff. But yeah, if you can, pick up a t-shirt.
I'm getting that coffee mug. I don't even drink coffee or tea, but I'm getting that mug just so I can put it on my desk or something at work. I got to have that one.
Oh, man. All right. Man, anything else before we wrap this up?
The Black Lives Matter guy.
Well, we're going to keep this geeked out, unless you can tie that into some TV movie talk or something. But that's a whole other conversation I do want to get into, but I don't know if that fits where we got going. Yeah, okay. I guess
the revelation that John Boyega is a Jedi Knight. Have we touched on that?
Well, no, we haven't. And I'm curious. I don't know if he's actually a Jedi Knight. We see him in a picture holding a lightsaber.
Well, I mean, there's only been one other time we've seen someone hold a lightsaber that wasn't a Jedi. That was with Grievous, and he was a robot. And at least he took down some Jedi, so.
Yeah. If you go in extended lore, Han Solo has held it. Lightsaber. So there's a new movie poster of The Force Awakens, and yes, it shows John Boyega's character. Is he Finn? I think his character name is Finn, with the lightsaber in his hand, which looks to be Luke's lightsaber from Empire Strikes Back. So it's very, very interesting what's going to be going on in that movie. But yeah, if he's a Jedi, I'm all on board. Either whatever he is, I'm all on board. But another black Jedi, yeah, I'm with it. Maybe they'll say he's Mace's son. I'm sure if it was Lucas' written script, he would be Mace Windu's son.
Lando!
Well, he'd have to be Force Strong, so he'd have to tie it into Mace, right? No, he's Jar Jar's. He's Jar Jar's son.
I'm just trying to get Billy Dee in the movie. That's all. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he still might be in it. You never know.
Come on, that would have leaked by now.
I don't know. We never know with these with Star Wars. They've been holding stuff pretty tight.
Still, speaking of Billy Dee, did you guys see his Unsung?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, so he was talking about, of course, Star Wars, and he was talking about how even to this day he still has kids coming up to him mad that he portrayed Han Solo and, you know, caused to be encased in carbonite. Like, wow. I guess that just tells you the power of that movie.
I can see that.
I'd be like, dude, you know this isn't real, right? And Han got out. Like, come on. Yeah, You want me to risk a whole goddamn city for one little white boy? Fuck out of here.
That's why I don't like you blacks.
I'm like, yep, well, and I do it again. Pros before bros.
Hilarious. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up. So you've been listening to Geeked Out here on Podcast Juice, like we always do about this time. We'll let you know where you can find us online. Sean Hill, where can they find you?
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Hill Street Views. You can also find me on Facebook, Sean Hill and Real Movie Talk, and the blog hillstreetviews.blogspot.com. Right now, new review of American Ultra, and I should be reviewing We Are Friends or something to that effect next week. So that'll be up on the blog and some new content and new stuff as far as trailers and clips and sound bites from upcoming films. So definitely check it out.
All right, Ant Poo.
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ant Poo, and I have a new article up at 411mania.com. Tommy K Ball.
All right, definitely check us out at Podcast Juice on Twitter, also on Facebook, Podcast Juice, the website, podcastjuice.net. My name is Michael Dean. Work it like a job. Peace. Oh, here, real quick, we can finish it out with this because I'm still recording. I don't know if you guys saw, I posted on Facebook, Prince versus Prince.
Oh, my God.
1982 versus 1987. I'm curious, Sean, what would you pick? Who would you?
Well, okay, if it had included 86 in the family album,
it does not.
So. I know it does not. I'm just giving a caveat. So based on what you posted, based on this, you know, the two selections, I got to go with 82. I mean, because you got Vanity 6, you got What Time Is It, and 1999. I mean, come on.
Okay, but Vanity 6 had two good songs. I mean,
no, there's more.
Drive Me Wild and Nasty Girl.
Whoa, that's interesting that you would pick those two.
If a girl answers, don't hang up. Yeah. A Million Miles.
No.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Right. Those
maybe
kids.
He's so dull, but that's just so poppy that you're like. Well, actually, he didn't have nothing to do with that one. You know, he might have.
That was
dead. Might have some production, a little production help on that, but yeah. But yeah, and then What Time Is It? Yeah, you can't not fuck with that whole album. But I'm just saying that the amount of output and some of the groundbreaking things that he did on Sign of the Times. Whew, just
I mean, it's a tough call. But I'm looking at, and you know, I know I do things kind of off the wall, but I'm looking at what he posts as far as the entire package, and those albums. Jill Jones' album is good, but it's not, you know, it's not great. The Sheila E. album, I don't even think I even own that one. And what was the other one?
Madhouse, the Beast.
Oh, Madhouse. Oh, well. I mean, I love that album too, but you put those three albums up against that, and it's absolutely no contest. Mm.
Man, that's interesting. Yeah, I personally, I would have to go with 82. And my only reason behind that is it's not as much material as the other stuff, but the potency and the songs are hand down iconic classic, like you know, 7 7 9 3 11. That song alone is a motherfucker on many levels. The walk, The fact that he's playing those instruments by himself. That's a killer album. 1999, that album is iconic. 1999, the song. Like, when you say Prince to some people, that'd be the first thing they say. We're gonna party like it's 1999. It's an iconic catchphrase in popular culture. Little Red Corvette, you know, Nasty Girl. I only personally think there's only two songs on Vanity 6, but one of those songs is Nasty Girl, which again,
what's the other one?
For me, it would be If a Girl Answers. But Nasty Girl on its own, still, as a song, is better than anything on Jill's album. And I love Jill's album, but that song blows out anything on there. Blows out anything on the Sheila E. album.
You know, it's funny. A friend of mine posted Nasty Girl, I think, last Friday. It's kind of, you know, throwback or whatever. And I said, it's kind of funny you put that up there, because I cite that. And I think I may have talked about that on this song here. The first, 30, 45 seconds of that song before the vocals come in, I always point to that song as one of the examples of what the Minneapolis sound is. You know, you got mm-hmm. that, you got that drum beat at the beginning, and then those synth horns, you know, come in, those synth stabs.
Yeah.
To me, that I won't say is the Minneapolis sound, but that is the best, or in the top, maybe five or three of the best representation of that. I would say the opening of Love Bazaar and DMSR. I think those are probably the three examples, at least for me, of kind of what the Minneapolis sound was.
Yeah, I mean, it's the 82 material is just like, to me, that puts 87 in context of why that's great. But I just feel like if 87 it came first, it wouldn't be what it is, because it just, you know, it's a reaction to how far he's come, which is a hip. Now, listen, the Madhouse album, for me personally, that's one of his greatest pieces of work, just because it's just the raw instrumentation of Prince doing everything except for playing, you know, of course, Eric Lees. I don't know how they would have sounded if he had an opportunity in 92 to record something like that. And it's not to say he didn't record an instrumental thing earlier than that, which is dope, but that particular time frame, it would have been curious to see if they say, hey, do an all instrumental joint. He would have had it with more synth, possibly, and no real horns. It might have sounded like a lot of these instrumental tracks you hear from that time period. I can't think of the names of those songs. They've recently
Possessed. There's Possessed.
There's a couple other ones that really have that.
Bless You Always, Climax.
Yeah. So there may be some things like that, which to me those sound like sort of real song ideas as opposed to instrumental work, but.
Wet Dreams Cousin, so I'm just randomly remembering.
But yeah, man. 87 is a beast, though. Whew. But just, I don't know. 82 is just like hood. Like.
No, you're perfectly right. I mean, 82 was more raw. I mean, those songs were, and I always say, that's the Prince that I miss the most. Just that. And at some point, I am going to finish this article I've been working on for damn near 6 months. I'm not saying this just to be nasty. The Legacy of 1999 album, because I think for me, that was the last raw Prince album. Just raw funk, just raw nastiness, just, you know, in your face sexuality, all of that stuff. That was the last time that was ever on a Prince record.
Yeah, that was the last album that had we had the Rude Boy on the cover, right?
Sure.
Yeah. All right, fellas.
Here we go. Let's go.